I want to say Kujichakalia Banigani. That's how we greet during Kwanzaa. We mention one of the principles each day. And the day is the second day of Kwanzaa. Last night was Umoja. And we would greet each other by saying Umoja Banigani. And on the second day is Kujichakalia, self-determination. And so when you meet somebody, the first thing is to greet them, you say Kujichakalia. You can say Abanigani Kujichakalia or Kujichakalia Abanigani, or just Kujichakalia, what's happening, or Kujichakalia, hey, good to see you. Anyway, you greet, but you know, you mentioned one of the principles, which is self-determination. I want to thank Brother Rashiki again for providing this platform for the Conscious Corner. I'm not going to be long. We just got a few topics that are in the headlines that directly affect Black people. This is very critical because, you know, it's a challenge. We wake up every day being American, and we have American ideas. We don't even have to think about being American because we're so acculturated. Acculturated means being absorbed by somebody else's culture. You have to choose to be Black and conscious and active. And if you don't choose that, you'll fall into a diminished capacity and lose the will to change. And that's why when they say all the violence that young people are participating in, or that all the violence in America, that's America. I mean, H. Rap Brown said violence is so much a part of America, it's just as much a part of American culture as apple pie is, and things of this nature. And Silverman, in his book, Violent Crimes and Criminals, he said, many of the ethnic and racial groups did not bring violence to America in the colonial period. They learned it after they got here. So when you look at drive-by shootings and you go back into the 20s with the Al Capones and the Italian and Irish mafias, they were doing drive-by shootings way before these kids could even carry a weapon. So that's where they get it from. The same thing with smash and grabs. Nobody smash and grabbed as much as America, what they did to the Native American. They had land grab. And they didn't grab no coats and no cell phones or anything like that. They grabbed land. And I'm pretty sure those of you that's in economics will agree that land is more valuable than anything. And that's how that contributed. Everyone knows that the labor contributed, but they needed land in order to work the labor. So they took the land from the Native Americans and land grabs and everything else. They had 240 treaties that they signed with the Native Americans, and they broke every one. The Native American kept his word in every one. That's why they referred to the white man as a forked tongue. Now, let's get this straight. No one is telling no one to hate white people. No. But in a cultural movement, you just learn to love your people with a special love because it's needed in order to have the patience, understanding, and a victorious understanding or a victorious attitude toward the struggle that we're in for human and social justice and equality, not just in America, but everywhere. There's racism in Britain, there's racism in Israel, there's racism all over the planet. And there's racism on the continent of Africa by the colonists. So, and that's where apartheid was. The three systems of racism, as I explained before. Apartheid, which was mainly living apart, was mainly in Africa. Just a minute.
All right.
Apartheid and racism, apartheid in Africa, which Bishop Tutu fought against, and Nelson Mandela and Winnie Mandela, fought against that. Now that means to live apart based on race. Then there's what they would call Zionism, which is European Zionists in Israel, or which was really Palestine, and only white Israelis can be in the government. And then there's Euro-American racism, which is a part of the natural origin of the United States and a part of the cultural apparatus. It's a part of their culture to discriminate against people of color. And that's what you see going on today with regards to the overt racism that you see coming out with the Trumpism and with the civil acts that's going on. You have white people telling librarians they can't carry books about black, about the Holocaust of enslavement, about any form of oppression because it makes white kids feel guilty. They've raised millions of dollars, millions, and formed Parents for Liberation organizations. And all they are white right-wing organizations using cancel culture and their rights as parents to mobilize people to vote. And that whole issue to get them to vote is to vote for white right-wing policies because they do not want to share their government, which they feel is only meant for white people. When they said Declaration of Independence, we were enslaved. Then when they talk about the United States Constitution, when it was written, we were enslaved. So we did not include people of ethnic and racial differences. So those are the issues that we have to take into account. We don't have to. Most people just want to live, want to just have a house, want to just have a car. They just want to enjoy the fruits of life in peace, you know, and they shed out what's going on as long as it doesn't disturb them. But at the same time, it's just a matter of time before it do touch their house, just like it's just a matter of time before other pandemics touch your house. We've been dealing with the pandemic of racism for years, and its effect. It has killed more Black people, destroyed more Black lives than any viral disease. Racism is the number one killer of Black people, and always has been. People don't like to say that, don't like to hear that. They do it with misuse of the health system, discrimination and racism in the health system, in the economic system. Like Dr. Naeem Akbar would say, it's a rare Black person that's not paranoid and not suffering from high blood pressure and other psychosis caused by racism and discrimination. So, you know, those are some of the things that I just wanted to throw out there and hopefully, generate some discussion, especially around this cancel culture and around this woman being found guilty. You had three major racist cases that people are saying disprove the system works. First, the George Floyd, where police were, a policeman had been convicted and four more of them are on trial for civil rights and for the death of George Floyd coming up. And then you had the Ahmaud Arbery case where three white people were found guilty. And now you've had this woman who in the Dayton Wright case found guilty. So some conservative Blacks and middle-class Blacks and others are saying, oh, this proved that the system works. But they forget about the thousands of cases that it's not working. They use these three high-profile cases, talking about there were majority white juries that are convicted police and this vigilante group in the Aubrey case, and that proved that the system worked. Well, you can argue that it worked that time, but you can't argue that it works all the time and that the majority of the time it don't work. They got a young man who was driving the truck, whose brakes went out, admit he was going at speed faster than he should have. Caused the death of four people, and they gave him 120 years, not as a movement to try to get his sentence reduced. Whereas there have been white people who killed hundreds, and they didn't get that much time. So intentionally, with guns and things of that nature. So we got to look at that from that standpoint. But from that themes that I just threw out there, I just wanted to see if there any response. Rasiki, do you have any?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the three cases, and that would be a, something like showcasing as far as sort of like a camouflage of everything else that goes on. It's just, I mean, it remains to be seen if, you know, there be more convictions of these perpetrators of all this violence and killing done by police officers that are white. And, you know, the insurrection kind of shows us that if you're white, you can get away with things. You know, they're slowly trying to get people, you know, prosecuted for that. But it's a real slow process. So all of this remains to be seen if there's going to be a shift in this system. But as Brother Doctor would say, I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. But the more we change, I think the system will kind of implode, you know. So it's really interesting to see all these things happening.
Well, there's two or three things that contributed probably to their conviction. One, the long protracted struggle for social justice, that there were hundreds of people outside the court case urging for a guilty verdict in the latest case. You know, there were thousands out there for George Floyd, and the same thing for Aubrey. We always have to give praises and respect to the people that turned out in the midst of a pandemic and the Black Lives Matter marches and things of this nature. Second is technology. And during the Rodney King, we had technology, but not like they have it today. Whereas body cameras, as well as everybody got a cell phone. And if they didn't video the George Floyd case, if you read the police report, it was like he attacked them. The same thing with Rodney King, and the same thing would have been if they didn't leak the case in the Aubrey case, where he was jogging and things of this nature. So that contributed. Thirdly, you have a sense of different judges when it came down to those three cases. Whereas in the Kenosha case with the white boy, the judge was definitely set the tone for him to be set free. Whereas you didn't have the you had police officers and Matt, what they even said, the district attorney put on people that was more helpful to the defense than it was to the defendant. So that was a setup. The second, possibly, the other thing is that when it comes down to the lady that shot Dayton Wright, there was not a lot of police outcry that, even though some officers testified that she was within policy, she didn't get the support that generally police come out and give her. because it was almost indefensible. And then the same thing with the three men. They even got the prosecutor, the original prosecutor, on trial for not prosecuting immediately in that case. So those things are contributing. The judges, the courtroom, as well as the people demonstrations. But you can go back to the Watts Rebellion as well as Ferguson, where hands up, symbolism and the I Can't Breathe movement out of New York. But without those major rallies and demonstrations and civil disobedience and rebellious and continued rebellious movement, I don't think they would have found that woman guilty. What about you, Doc? How's your position on some of these issues?
Yeah, I agree. Everything you just said, same thing with Roscoe Key. Everything's still going to happen. The officers are not held accountable. We just had a shooting here in L.A. I don't know if you saw that one where the little girl got shot at the Burlington store. You got some officers out here. Someone's getting beat down. Guy didn't have a weapon. He was beating someone else or beating someone else up. And they ended up pulling out the gun, shooting him, and the bullet went through a wall and killed somebody else, So killed a little 14-year-old girl or something like that, you never shoot when you don't know what's behind a wall. An officer should never shoot, the perpetrator, the suspect wasn't using didn't have a gun. I guess he was assaulted somebody.
He had a chain with a lock on it. He was swinging.
So he starts shooting guns at someone. Man, you see what happens with that case. But yeah, the other one, they're always going to hand us a victory. You're always going to get, like you said, you're going to get one victory, but there's thousands of others that go unpunished, man. They lie their way out. All they got to do is say, "I fear for my life." That's my thing. How can you fear? You're getting into a job where it's expected you get shot and get killed, but you're going to get something and get in there and say, "You fear for your life." I was in law enforcement, man, and I would never use that. "I fear for my life," as far as trying to get out of something, So when shooting at you, shoot them back. I wouldn't shoot someone unarmed because I fear for my life. I don't know. It's just where we were, we're raised at, hard knocks, man. Until we get a point where officers are held accountable, lose that retirement. Like I said before on the show, man, you go back to the Western days. Let everybody have a gun. You got a problem with an officer? I'm calling him out in the middle of the street. Say, "Draw, Marshal." You go to jail, you do your time. As soon as you get out, they give you a six shooter and you go back on your way. Do away with that where felonies can't have guns again. Until you make it to that point and do like England, where no officers have no guns. I tell you one thing, you do that here, officers can't have any guns. I guarantee you 90% of white officers will resign. You get people in there that really want to make a difference. You wouldn't have all these racist people in there because they're nothing without that badge and that gun, man. You take that away, man, 98% of officers will resign.
I agree.
But going back to that, like I said last year, it's going to happen again. Someone unarmed is going to get shot next year, probably a dozen or so. Out of that dozen, one may go to jail. The other one, 11, may get off. It's just, like you said earlier, man, all the drive-bys, all this, all the crime, all that, that's what they invented, man. That's their stuff, man. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. The challenge, Doc, is that, like you say, and I agree with you 100%, that, most officers, at one time, they would say, I'm going out to serve and protect. They even had it on their car. Now they go home, they leave home, and they say, I just want to get home alive. And when you go out with a mentality, I want to get home alive, you're going to protect your life. If you suspect somebody dangerous, it's like we used to say when we had a gun, I'd rather be caught with it than without it. Their attitude is, I'd rather shoot, get fired, get sued through this immunity clause than to get killed and go get a job somewhere else doing law enforcement or private security. But I'm not going to take no chance. And that's the attitude many officers have that has led to, that has contributed to some of the shootings that we have. So you're correct on that, Doc. But I don't think everybody should have a gun and draw on each other, because there's too many people that will abuse it. You know, there are people be getting shot in the back all day. In my opinion, that's how Jesse James got it, a fixed systemness. But anyway, Mashinda, you have any comments on some of the things we've been discussing?
Well, you know, I had some technical difficulties, but I, you know, managed to get back in. And, you know, I think when I lost connection, I think you were talking about, in a nutshell, about, you know, like Native Americans getting played, you know, with smallpox. You might have didn't bring that out tonight, but you were just basically, you know, more of the same, you know, like, hey, you know, design structure, you know. But what came to my mind, white dude I know in New Orleans, you know, I used to work with him, you know, and he was like one of the supervisors there at this little, and I was doing some counseling and with juveniles, kids, you know, they were, it's a day school. And so I was one of the counselors. And so long story short, me and the white guy, we went out and got something to eat for lunch. You know, we became friends, you know, so we hook up every now and then. We'd run to get a sandwich or something, you know, whatever. So one day we went to this restaurant, came out, he saw one of his boys. He said, oh, you know, some guy, I forget, Johnny or somebody. We went in his house, and so he had a guy over there, some dude had on a suit. Looked like he was had his tie loosened up, having a cocktail, and the other dude was cooking some gumbo. So they was all just, you know, I don't know if they worked together at some point, whatever. So I find myself, you know, sitting in the living room there, and the guy asked me in the suit. He said, "Hey, y'all work together? Y'all, you know?" I said, "Oh yeah, we don't work together now, you know." And I explained all that. And, you know, said we work in education and stuff like that, whatever. And I said, what do you do? He said, well, he said, I'm an attorney. And he worked for a company called Freeport MacMoran. And in a nutshell, it's one of those multinational companies that basically, and as he described it, we were talking and he was saying that, you know, how he said one thing he don't like about his job. He was like a senior executive attorney for the company, like a vice president. At least that's what he told me. But the point is, he was saying that what he didn't like about it was that they set up puppet governments, pretty much. He said that they create civil war amongst natives, you know, pristine, you know, like in Indonesia, they do a lot of manipulation in Indonesia. That's one of the biggest copper and gold deposits in the world, you know. And you know, so I said all that to say that, I mean, they're orchestrating this, very calculated, you know, mathematically calculated, you know. So that's what came to mind when I chimed out, when I had little technical difficulties. But I'm just listening. Thank you for presenting tonight.
Yeah, you know people think when you got two major powers, well, it's three, China, and then they talk about the New World Order includes China. First, it was just America and Russia. Now they have to deal with China, and then really they have to respect all the other countries that have nuclear weapons. And when you say the United States, you have to include Israel, NATO, and the European allies. And their interest is, you know, like they don't want to change their lifestyle. Even so, some of the white countries are socialists. They you know, America will say, let me give an example. They'll say, we're going to, just recently, they said, we're not going to do no trading with Ethiopia because of human rights violations. But the biggest violation of human rights is China. But they still do trade with them. They say we don't respect dictator government, but they still deal with Saudi Arabia. Whatever at their interest, that's what they do. And they have so many contradictions and so many distortions of their reality that they tell the people. Their concern is global because of the fact they are worried about Ukraine not being a democratic society, but for military operations. That gives them an advantage to be on Russia's doorstep with an ally where they can put weapons. That's what's going on in South Korea and in Japan and all on the border of China. And America got military apparatus there and military soldiers there. To them, China went into a cultural revolution, built a wall, wouldn't let nobody in or out, and developed cultural strength to the point that now they are economic and political power in the world. They're out doing what Americans do, and that's going and investing in other countries and setting up businesses and corporations in other countries. I ran across a Chinese who was, had been working in Ghana. And I said, you know, what's going on? He said, well, they got the resources and they build a wall and in certain parts of Africa and they setting up a little Chinese settlement. And they don't want to go back to China. They say they got more freedom on the continent of Africa than they would have if they went back to China. The same thing, but China, is benefiting from their work there. So now you have China colonizing Africa under the auspices of certain aspects of Africa, because it's 12 million square miles. For minerals and setting up plants to help with their development of cell phones and the material that goes into making the phones work and things of that nature, as well as other pipelines and things of that nature. So you have to look at, they're thinking about their interest of surviving as a world power. And how do you survive as a world power? You don't do it by just being a defense country from the standpoint of just dealing with your border. Now, they have problems letting people in, but they're in, as Mashinda just said, hundreds of countries building new nations, starting with Pakistan. And going over, they tried to do it in Iran. They're doing it in Iraq. And they tried to do it in Libya. They did it in Sierra Leone, as well as Liberia. You know, the first governments over there were Europeans. I mean, we were black people that represent European interest. And so you got to see it from a global perspective. What they get mad at us is when we start looking at the world, they say, you need to just worry about poverty and just what's going on in the United States and not get a worldview. And what you were explaining, Mashinda, was a worldview of the world and the earth. And then you get a better gauge of why white folks do what they do, not just because it's a part of their physical challenge of dealing with black people or people of color. Through miscegenation, they want to restrict. They have to demonize black people and keep them weak so that their women and children doesn't get intimately involved on a high level. They already doing it for economic reasons. A lot of brothers that marry white women, generally it's the white woman that choose them versus the man choosing the white woman. They may desire a white woman, but if she say rape, he's in trouble. So the point is that we must see it from a global dynamic. That's my point of them building nations and things of that nature. So that's a good point you raised, Mashinda. And why are they doing it? To stay in global power. They want to be a world power. They don't want to be a United States power. They want to be a world power. And you have to have strategic places. They got military bases all over Africa. The World War II was fought in Africa, in Tunisia. And most wars, they go over there and fight. They don't want to fight in their own land, and those are the things that we're dealing with. But when you think about what is the difference, is there a difference between what you would call civil rights, civil liberties, and human rights. So if someone was to ask you to define those three things, how would you define them? Rashiki, is there a difference between human rights, civil rights, and civil liberties?
Well, human rights would be considered global. What's the other two?
Civil rights and civil liberties.
Well, those would be sort of local, you would say.
Okay.
And I think the human rights that would be global.
Well, how do you enforce human rights?
Well, you have, you have NATO, right? And then you have World Health Organization. Okay. You have these global institutions to enforce, these human rights. But when you have world powers like the United States, China, Russia, they're not really, they violate human rights.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you have these individual entities that, that's like you said earlier, they're concerned about their global, their interests all over the world, and they're maintaining what they have in place. But the civil liberties and the civil rights would be, I would say, more local, depending on where you are.
How would you define, is there a difference between civil liberties and civil rights?
I'm pretty sure they are, but I would have to, I would have to actually do a little more reading and define it, with a little more reading and research. I don't deal in that area on a consistent basis. So, I learn it and lose it.
Okay. What about you, Doc? Is that, how do you see human rights, and civil liberty?
Kind of like Rashki, my thing is human rights, there's a difference. Is that what you're asking? And you're asking, what is the difference?
Yeah.
Human rights would probably be the basic necessities of food, water, shelter. Civil rights would be more where you want to be, have a right as someone else. Someone else has something, have a right, the same right as them. That's something that's not necessarily the basic, like, water, food, air, and what was the other one, right?
Civil liberties.
Civil liberties. So you have civil rights, civil liberties, civil rights and liberties. Civil liberties, I see, it seems to me it's more freedom, just basic freedom.
Mm-hmm.
to kind of do what you want. The civil rights, like I said, that's something that you want that someone else has, of a different race or a different culture. You want the same ability, the same chance as someone else, or have something else, the same advantage someone else has that you're not given the opportunity to do or have. But basic human rights, water, food, shelter. I think every human right has, someone has, you know, even with slavery, they fed us, not been the best food, but it kept you alive. That's what I see the difference of it.
All right. What about you, Mashinda? Mashinda, you still there? He's off and on. Let me just make y'all think about a few things. Asante for that, Rashiki. Civil rights are rights guaranteed to people, generally in a democracy, that includes the right to vote, the right to education, the right to live where you want to live, and the right to economic rights to earn a living. Those are what they call the four pillars of civil rights. The right to vote, one. And you find them mostly in democratic society. There's no civil rights in dictatorships and monarchies and things of this nature. Civil rights are generally civil rights that more on that level of that. Rights that a citizen is entitled to, American citizens. Sometimes they grant them to immigrants, but through various state rights and federal rights, they allow them to vote or allow them to do things. But mostly civil rights they're more of a political a process of guaranteeing. Generally, civil rights are guaranteed by the government that you're in. They have civil rights divisions and things of this nature. Civil liberties, as the good doctor says, freedom from the government to impose on you, like take your property, like your freedom of speech, your freedom of the press. That's why they have the Civil Liberties Union. You have civil rights groups that fight for the people's right to vote, against housing discrimination, against employment discrimination, against economic discrimination, hiring and firing discrimination. All those come under violations of civil rights, and they're generally enforced by the country that is a democratic country and by what you would call your courts. You generally sue. And there are some times where you can be charged criminally for violating someone's civil rights, like they do sometimes when the federal government gets involved. The second one, civil liberties, is more guaranteed by the people, civil liberties unions. They file suits, and they're the safeguard for civil liberties. Your right, freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of religion, freedom against the government seizing your property, freedom from being unwrongfully incarcerated, a violation without a trial and things of this nature. Human rights is, that Rashiki was saying, is more of a national thing. The United Nations generally and what they would call national and international human rights groups generally are the critics of people that violate human rights. And it's global because democratic and autocracies, as well as dictatorships, can violate human rights. And that is generally genocide. Genocide is systematic annihilation of a people or abuse of a people, both physically or psychologically. As a humanitarian crisis such as starvation, plagues, various forms of issues that affect the people that others could help, and the government could help but allows it to happen, is violation of civil rights, of human rights. They had the Human Rights Convention in 1948, the United Nations, where they spelled out what human rights were. And many of them criticized and can call for boycotts or other forms of punishment, economic sanctions against countries that violate human rights within their borders. And they have to deal with human rights because many of these countries are dictatorships and they don't have a civil rights of posture. So you see things from a global dynamic. That's very important. Well, it's not very important. You know, most people don't even think about these things. You know, they just take everything for granted. And then when something happened, then they scream, you know, racism, you know, Morgan Freeman, Michael Jackson. All of a sudden they get black when the white man turn on them, but the system turn on them. And they scream racism or violations of their civil rights. But, you know, I mean, America's a violation of that. You know, they're doing it right now with voter suppression and gerrymandering and things of this nature. Because power is an addiction for some people. Most people just want to live in peace and enjoy their life, go to Disneyland, Magic Mountain, and, you know, get their kids a good education and live their lives out. But there are other people that say there ain't but so much of that to go around, and we wouldn't be privileged if we allow you to do the things we do. And we wouldn't feel privileged if you can do the same thing they do. You go take a look around and drive around, you see white folks living on top in canyons, on top of canyons, on mountains, big mansions all over Anaheim Hills, Laguna, Palos Verdes. And it's predominantly white that's getting away from black. There's white folks that move near the San Onofre nuclear plant or the Santa Barbara nuclear plant to get away from being around whites and saying, this is a safe neighborhood. You may be safe from gangs and urban, but you're not safe from the nuclear plant, especially if there's a spillage. But those are the things that are very people. And the same thing with culture. People think culture is just food, dance, music, when it's deeper than that. So philosophy, it's an in-depthness of ritualization who you are. The celebration of who you are. It starts with family. You know, what is your family culture? And that cultivates your personal culture. That's why most ethnic groups are named after their historical family. And they expand and expand and become nations. But ethnic and race is different. Ethnic is history, land, and physical identity and similarities and things of this nature. Racism. It's generally about just pigmentation, but you build a culture around racism when you develop black people and Jamaicans and Haitians are all black, but they have different ritualizations of that blackness. That's why Haitian culture is different from a Jamaican culture. Jamaican culture is different from Brazilian culture, black culture. And Black Americans' culture is different from all of them. Our blues, our gospel, come from our condition that was forced upon us because of our pigmentation, of racism and incarceration. So we developed a culture around that identity. They developed a culture around their identity. That's why some Black people speak Spanish. They were conquered by Spaniards. Spaniards are white. You have to understand that cultures are created by the people, you know, just like gods are created by people. You know, that's not to take away from people that are spiritual, because the whole Bible is a spiritual talk. It's not about reality. It's physical. Jesus was, you know, Santa Claus is, most people celebrate Christmas. They don't celebrate Jesus. They celebrate Santa Claus. You know, they're out looking for Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. They're not looking for Jesus to come back on his birthday. You ever hear anybody say Jesus will resurrect on his birthday? you know, because they don't even know if that's really his birthday. If he ever existed, or if he did exist, he wasn't the first to claim that God was his daddy. You know, there was a lot of them that went around the country. I think John G. Jackson said there was 16 saviors before Jesus. There was over 250 women who said they had babies through immaculate conception. He named them and put some, tell you where you can find them. And so, I mean, it's a lot for people to, you know, some people don't want to know these things because it's too much. Then they mean they got to do something about it. So let me just be ignorant of it. You know, I don't want to get into those discussions. I just want to talk, play talk, fun talk, enjoyment talk, play dominoes, kill Big Six, you know, and play tonk, play whist, play spades, drink beer, watch football games. You know, I just want to be American, you know. But then along with that comes somebody breaking in your house and shopping in it like it's a Target when you go to work, because they know you got stuff in it and they don't have it, but the system says, or either they just want it. Some people that commit crimes, they just do it. They already have things and they just do it because that's the nature of the culture of America. America is a crime enterprise. It always has been. And people just mimic it so far from that standpoint. Any response, Rasha Key?
Hey, you right about that. It is a criminal enterprise. And it's just, when you look at a culture, I would say that according to you, according to Neely Fuller, it basically is what you're doing at the time you're doing it. It's whatever you're doing when you're doing it. And our society, our government, our system is based off of criminality and gangsterism, you know. You mentioned earlier about the treaties. Every treaty was broke that you mentioned. It was 204, you said? Yeah, you know, and we speak of mental illness. You got to be mentally ill to do those type of things to people, you know, to kill people. So there has to be a mental shift in order for things to get, you know, supremely better. So it's just like it's back being in class again, Professor Ra. You bring up all of this good information, and you know, it's helping me get back on my toes in a place I need to be. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm gonna just keep pushing forward and doing these things. So I appreciate all the, you know, the information that you bring forth here.
All right. Machinda, any response? You back yet? What about you, good doctor?
Same thing with Rosh Key. I mean, hey, it is what it is, you know. Rosh Key says that. I mean, just like you just said with the playing the cards, the dominoes, you know, you people, especially us, you just want to fit in, man. You don't want no problems. You know, as long as you go to work, then you can hang out on the weekends with your boys and try to stay low key, out of trouble, man. Don't bother them. They won't bother me. And you, like you said, on the other shows, you got some that just want to be with them, be like them, be liked. You know, I think that's the one problem we have, man. We just got a lot of people that just want to be liked and be welcomed by the white community. And you got us, man. We, you know, you grew up, you just didn't understand it growing up, man. We're just in our zone doing our thing and just moving through life, man. then, like I said, once you get in that world, the working world, like Lashinda was saying, you start working with whites and all different races, man, and you see the difference. You know, like I said, I can remember working. You walk around, you see a group of white people, you know, at work talking, nothing happened. But as soon as you get two or three more blacks together talking, they want to come break it up, see what you're talking about. You know, they all want to interrupt you, man. But when they're all together, no one wants to go break their stuff up. But yeah, it's like you said, man, it's just you just got that issue, man. You know, it's never gonna change. We're never gonna get the power. You know, this is not our place, man. You know, they brought us over here to fix their stuff, to build their stuff. It's theirs, man. We, you know, we didn't bring them over here. At one point, I think we could have tucked them over. I think, like I said in the beginning, I think it was more slaves than whites, you know, but, you know, and just like this other brother I just watched on YouTube, he was kind of bringing the point you were saying, you know, you got a lot of these people want to go back to Africa, go to Gambia, another little Ghana. And he was like, well, why would I want to go there to a poor country and try to take their resources? I'd rather stay here while the resource, because he's into Bitcoins, investing, real estate. So I stay here. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to make more money here than in Ghana. You know, so I'm going to take the white man's money. I'm not going to go to Africa and take their money, which they're already depleted in funds, poor country. And just like you said with the break-ins, I watched these black families that move over to the Gambia and Ghana. Just like you said, as soon as they leave, man, they come in and break in their house and take everything. In Africa, man, they take everything. They come home to an empty house, man. When you get there, like in Gambia and Ghana, you can hire a little security guard to watch your house. And the guy said, man, we hired this guy to watch our house. We went out, came back, everything was gone. And the security guard claimed, no, he fell asleep. You know, they came in and raided the house, man. So, I saw the issues they have there, the internet, getting the cars fixed. You know, they go to the market. The natives are charging them 10 times what they charge the regular Gambians. You know, they do the same thing to, you know, because you're black American. You know, they take advantage of there just like the whites take advantage of here. They got a Chinese store out there. It's like a Home Depot. The guy went and bought all this equipment. Stuff only lasts a week. You know, it's a Chinese company run by a black natives there in Gambia, and he brought all the stuff back. They wouldn't fix it. He said, that's it, man. He's not going to deal with black people in Gambia. He's going to go to the Indians. The stuff break there, they fix it, you know, give you a warranty. And, you know, it's just as bad over there for us when we go there, man. It's just as bad as here. You know, you're going to have racism, but you got to pay off your cops at every little checkpoint. You know, so... it goes to what you say, just depending on what type of lifestyle you want to live. Yeah. You know, you can tap dance here, you know, or go over there, man, and join the struggle. Just surviving out there, man.
Yeah, there's certain parts of Africa, if you don't go with the resources and visit there before to understand the culture and understand the things you just said, you can go there and get ripped off. They talk about that at the airport with your luggage.
Yeah, I just saw that with the... They say you coming from here, man. They say you got coronavirus and try to charge you all this extra money when you're not really sick, man. I just saw a few videos of that, man.
Yeah. It could be in certain parts of Africa. And then there are other parts that welcome you, like in Ghana and other places that where they offer land and offer things. There was a brother named Africa. He named himself Africa. I forget his
name. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I saw his videos.
And he had a culture center in Vermont, and I bought him out for $4,500 because he wanted to go back to Africa. And so him and his wife.
Okay, I'm thinking of somebody else then.
Yeah.
Him and his wife. He has YouTube. Yeah, and he's from Long Beach.
There's him and his wife, and and the kids went to Africa. And they got out and they welcomed them and it was nice. And when they went to build the land was so hard, the axe wouldn't even go through it, whatever that thing is, the sharp pick iron wouldn't even go through it. And then when they went to sleep in the bush, and they built these thatch huts, Aboriginal style. There were bats in it. So he asked the dude, how do you get rid of the bats? And the guy reached up, grabbed one, threw him on the ground and killed him and said, that's how we get rid of them. You understand? And so then he stayed a month and a half and he was back. And when he came back, he had to stay at my house. I picked him up at the airport, him and his kids, and then I let him back into his culture center, you know, and let him get his place back because he went there with the wrong understanding that you can go to Africa, they'll give you land, they gave him land, gave him some land, but you, if you don't have the resources to develop that land and the knowledge of what that land was about before you went, you're just going on a fantasy. And this is sometimes what people have. Africa is a continent. It's not a one place. It's not a country. And there's mountains, there's rivers, there's different landscapes, there's sudded areas, which they call jungles, but really just sudded areas, swamp land or whatever. And people live in those, but they know how to live in it. They're Black Africans that live amongst the testy fly and the mosquito and don't get malaria. Whereas you have to get vaccines before you go because the water is different. Everything's different. And most people say, I'm going back to Africa. Well, you got to know how. And you got to have the resources. But getting back to what you were saying, Doctor, thievery and crime. That's why, see, people get, you know, they doubt it, their God, religion. But without religion, some people wouldn't have a moral consciousness. And that's what, you know, religion do to some people. You know, they don't steal because they fear their God. They don't lie because they fear their God. They think it's a sin. And that helps society. Don't aim about do they believe in Jesus or do they believe in Muhammad. It's the morality and the ethics that comes with being a Muslim, would come being a Christian, come with those that identify with Judaism or those that identify with other religions that have moral compasses in them and ethics and morals that teach you to treat other people justly and to feel bad if you mistreat people, if you violate the tenets of the morality and that you could go to hell and that keeps you from being bad. The consequences of going against what God told you not to do and the Ten Commandments or whatever, keep you as a moral person. Some people it helped. Some people, you know, the biggest crooks are ministers. And, you know, I mean, they get caught with adultery, they get caught with stealing money from the church, they get, you know, driving churches into bankruptcy, they get the gospel of prosperity. All kind of problems they come up with, you know, and so that make people think religion is bad, but there's certain dynamics in religions and various religions that help a society and help a culture when you meet people and greet people with the ethics that comes from their religion, providing their religions have ethics and morals. So it's a challenge, you know. I mean, you don't have to be a religious to be a good person to practice morality and ethics. That could just be a non-sectarian philosophy and value system, such as in Guru Sabha's seven principles. You know, I mean, because when I grew up, I thought just not liking white people was being Black. But no, loving Black people was being Black, respecting, not stealing, not robbing from your own people, not selling drugs to your own people, not violence, no arguing, no fighting, you know. But when I was young, you know, because I was around them, but black people, they, you know, they were our victims or I was their victim. You know, I mean, we all victimized each other until we grew up and got more mature and got more spiritual and got more education and then developed a philosophy of life. And what I hear from you, doctor, you know, yeah, most people are Americanized and they just, they see Americans living, you know, they go out and they celebrate these holidays the way Americans celebrate them. You know, they eat, gorge themselves at dinner because that's American culture, you know, a ritualization. A cult is who doing the believing. The cult is what you believe in. You know, so a cult would be Christians. The cult would be Jesus. A cult would be Muslims. The cult would be Prophet Muhammad. You know, that's who you reach out. And people make up stories behind each cultural deity. You know, walk on water, heal this, heal that. But that's spiritual talk. Some people say, ain't nobody going to walk on water. Well, they weren't talking about, you know, really walking on water. They were just talking about faith. Faith in getting over troubled waters. You know, but, you know, it's hard to see it that way as a Bible, meaning a collection of stories. And that's what the word Bible means. Collection of story. Holy Bible means they are religious stories, divine stories. There's no reference. There's no proof. It's just God's word to that he revealed to certain people. Or certain people had said that, you know, the voice of God spoke to me in the middle of the valley of death and told me to do this and told me to do that. Those are stories, just stories, you know. There's no proof of none of that stuff happening. But Mashinda, you have any comments? You back yet? All right. What about you, Rashiki?
Oh, I'm good. I'm just gonna. I need to do a little bit more reading so I can be able to answer some of your questions when you ask. But no, I'm enjoying the information, the real good information.
Good doctor, any more comment?
Yeah, let me ask you this. You were talking about basic human rights, civil rights.
Civil liberties.
And we were talking about surviving. What's the difference between surviving and thriving? When you compare that to human rights and civil rights.
Well, it's at different levels of survival.
And but thriving, thriving,
thriving is working toward it. When you thrive toward something, like we thrive toward being freedom. We thrive toward making the world better. That's moving something. Where surviving is, hey, just existing. The oldest, as we use it in Kauaita, we always say, the cockroach is the oldest surviving insect on the planet. But how does it survive? Running through cracks when the lights come on and eating off the plates and that people leave or food that people drop. You don't want to survive. You want to always develop or either thrive toward development. You're thriving when you get an education getting an education so that you can live better, get better employment. That's thriving. Surviving is, hey, look, man, by any means necessary. You know, I'm gonna do whatever I got to can. Do whatever I can, just to maintain. You know, I'm not trying to go nowhere or be nothing. I'm just trying to just hold on to what I have or who I am or what I got. And I'm just trying to survive. You know, it's like, you know, you drowning, you're in the water, and you're just trying to get out of it, trying to live. Whereas thriving is you're trying to, hey, I want to get a boat. I want to I want to be able to, you know, travel. I want to be able to do things. That's where I see that.
So why do wanting to thrive cause more problems in the Black community than surviving?
Because you're competing with others that are striving, and the system make you think that only a few can really be successful at thriving. Achievement. Envy and greed are the driving forces of a capitalist society. You see people advertised living this way, having this thing. You look at Ebony, you see Black people in mink coats leaning up against Rolls Royce with a cocktail, you understand, on the magazine. You see Black people in houses and actors and entertainers, but that's only a small amount of Black people. But you want to have those things. And so in order to get those things, you need opportunity. Now, we say you can get those things if you work hard. The biggest lie they tell people that whatever you dream, you can be. If you don't let nothing stop you. Only a minority are successful. There's only a minority that's a Michelle Obama or Kamala Harris. There's only a minority of women that will ever get to that point. But thriving will be, they're using them as a role model. But there's only so much. You're competing to get thousands of people. When you apply for a job, other hundreds of people have applied for it. Now, if you're the best qualified and they tell you no and choose a relative or choose someone with less qualification because of the pigmentation of their skin or their religion, or their sexual orientation, then you say, hey, look, I'm just going to steal. I'm just going to hustle. If you're going to lock the doors of opportunity for me to get the things that you advertise I should want and have, then you lock the door for me getting it. What choice do I have? First, you plant the seed in me to want these things. One of the coldest diseases out is the want. Because the only cure is to have. We spoil our children that way. You know, giving them what they want instead of making them earn what they get. And realize that there's work involved. You know, we learn these lessons as we get older. One of the biggest lies is that the Santa Claus is going to bring you gifts. You got kids putting things in stockings and going to the mall, sitting on this guy's lap. And telling them, hey, what do you want? And I'm going to bring it. And they don't even have a shimmy for him to get his fat butt down. And, you know, they're living in projects or wherever, poor place. Their parents have them putting up stockings. Some are saving this for Santa and leaving some cocoa out. You know, that's what they, you know, why lie to kids? You know, and then they ain't been to church. They forget this is Jesus' birthday. They don't even teach their kids one principle of Jesus. You understand? It's just, you know, just take them to the malls and just buy stuff because it's what? America. As Rotsky says, it's commercialization of education. Everything in America is based on capitalism. Education, you know, housing, you know, politics, it's all based upon, you know, money is the most important accumulation because you use it as a medium of exchange for power and wealth and, class, you know. You know, so that's how I see that, Doc.
Oh, yeah. So it's easier to survive than to thrive. Let me put it like this.
Well, not only that, you can be successful. You know, me surviving? They started out as a survival act, you know, and then all of a sudden it becomes prosperous. They don't open up no legitimate business. Most dope dealers stay in the dope game and most robbers continue to rob. Most stealers continue to steal. They started out, this was their way to survive, or this is their way to get the things they want. And they develop that mentality. And you look at it and you say, why people are doing these things? You know, why they just go to school? Well, you don't have to fill out no application. to be a thief, a robber, a dope dealer. You pick your own hours. You're making money. You understand? Yeah. I mean, you don't have to go through all that discrimination. Work. I mean, it's work. When you say you're going to go to school and get a college degree, that's like saying, oh, I'm going to lock, that's 4 to 6 years of study if you're full-time. You know, if you don't have a part-time job to go with that or some assistance, scholarship, or funds, oh, man, that's why it takes so long. I mean, you're signing up for 4 years of going to school to get a degree. And it takes the average person 6 to 8 years to get a four-year degree now. I mean, that's here you are, a young brother, trying to help your mama and daddy, mama, because you're coming from a single parent, you're going to go get a job. You know, and try to hustle. My parents who have kids hustle, don't tell them stop hustling. Or don't say, don't bring that bad money here. They accept it. You understand? They're helping their brothers and sisters. They're doing what they can do. I remember, man, when we used to steal, we used to bring the food home. We'd break into school, man, get the bread, get the stuff, take it home. Because they didn't have none at the house. In the old days, we wait and watch the delivery man. When he come to make the delivery at the hamburger stand or the store, or at the 7-Up store, we'd go and grab the bottles and keep on running, you know, while he's in there delivering. I mean, you know, that's just was the way we came up in Watts. You know, and others taught us that. Other cats shot dice, played tonk. You know, we used to lag pennies. We hustled each other in school. You lag pennies, everybody lag dimes and pennies. Do you understand? Anyway, we could gamble. You know, big fights broke out. We used to carry switchblades. They used to call push button knives. And stuff like that. You get from Tijuana, a little red knife, a knife pop out when you push the button. All that crazy stuff, man. But that's on a survival level. When you living in a middle class, people commit just as many crimes as poor people. And they're not doing it before survival. That's why they say people that's poor, you lock up. People that are rich and steal, what you do? You just give them a little slap on the hand and tell them don't do it no more. It's called embezzlement. You can steal more with a pencil and a computer than you can with a gun going in a 7-Eleven or a bank and getting money with dye on it. You understand? You know, and when you can switch accounts. Look at this woman on trial for fraud in Simi Valley, I forget, she's on trial right now. She stole millions of dollars on a fake investment. You understand? Look at me.
Yeah, yeah, I know you're talking about. So let's go keep on that note. You guys are teachers in the educational. When I was going to school in Compton, with all you just said, I look back at it now, it seems like the school, the whole school program, the district, the country, the world, going to school in Compton, we were just taught more to survive than to thrive. And your opinion on that? In black schools, we're taught more to survive than to thrive. What's your opinion on that?
No. Most of the time they said in order for us to be successful, we had to get educated. In those days, when we first started out, a high school diploma meant something. Now I don't. You understand, but when we was coming up, just graduate from high school. So when you applied for a labor job during those days, Northrop, Douglas, American, or whatever that was, and U.S., Long Beach Naval Shipyard, and all those type of places, Firestone Rubber, refineries, they required black people to have a high school diploma because most of them didn't have it. And most people, you know, didn't have it, those things. And you could get a good job. Matter of fact, the only requirement for be a policeman is a high school diploma. But now they give you a test. When they first started out, they didn't give tests. You just be white and have a high school diploma or ex-military person. But now they give you a test. The same thing with being a nurse. Nurse, you got to pass, after you take all the classes, you got to take a state exam. You understand? So you have to learn. It's a whole different game. When it all depends on what school you went to and who was your teacher. If they taught you survival mentality or taught you an inspiration or gave you the advice that that helped you. There's some, we used to have metal shop, wood shop, print shop, drafting, electronics, and all that type of stuff. These kids don't have that. It's all about testing now. But because technology then took over. So now what do you have to get? Computer technology, coding, all kind of technical skills. You know, they got robots doing stuff now. So the labor opportunity of using labor is almost obsolete. Although when you took your car to get fixed, they don't even call them mechanics. They call them technicians. Because what? Your car is more technological now than it is. It's just like what Ice-T be saying. You know, you can't fix a car with a screwdriver and a wrench no more and jumper cables. They charge you $50 to take your battery out and $50 to put it back in and then charge you for the battery. That's why a battery costs you $200. $100 for the battery and $100 for me to take it out and put it in. So they charge big money for labor, but they call it skilled labor. You see? And so the education we're getting is a miseducation because they're not providing the skills that a kid needs once they finish high school.
And that's my point. So it's all about survival teaching now. It's not thriving teaching, right? You just said that is not there anymore. So it's more survival.
No, they're connected with getting the fundamentals so that you can go and learn skills. In other words, the skills today are more technological. So you end up in a community college learning these skills, getting certification for plumbing, certification for electrician. Whereas in high school, you can get out and you can go to a trade school and you didn't need a lot of that. And the opportunities were there. But even your appliances today, they are more different from the stoves our parents had. You know, it's not just going and putting in a gas line. You got to deal with setting a computer on the stove, setting the computer on the washer, making sure that everything worked different. You know, the thing cuts itself on, cuts itself off, got self-cleaning in it. It's a different refrigerator. You have refrigerators that have ice makers in them and things of that nature. And it takes technological sense to repair that. Whereas before, you can just take the motor out and put another one in. No. Not in this day and age. You got to learn the technology of things. Now, they ain't even teaching them survival skills. They're teaching them testing skills. It's up to you to develop the math, the writing, the reading ability to go after you get out of high school, you get technical licensing. Even at, let me give you an example, man. Just to be a real estate agent, you have to go take different classes now, man, because there's a state board exam. To be a broker, you got to do that. Before, you can just go and be a real estate agent. You know, you used to just put a shingle up. But now they make you the state regulations because of swindles, because of this, and because of unions. You want to be a plumber or you want to be a welder, you got to be in the union to get union scale pay. Or you open up your own business, you know, and then you got to fight to try to get a contract or do handyman jobs or local jobs and hope that you can find one rather than be with a union and get on some of these skyscraping jobs and some of these major projects, housing projects, whereas you have at least a 6 month to a year work versus you going around putting your name in a newspaper hoping somebody calls you. Man, it's a different game out there. That's the only thing I'm saying, Doc. It's not about survival. You know, they're teaching new skills to be able to pursue professional skills and licensing skills in California. Now, you can go in the South, and in certain states, they don't have these requirements. But California is a certificated and licensed state. You know, it's like it's an oil state. They don't build rapid transit. They build freeways. You know, this is an oil-driven state, gas-driven state. You know what I'm saying? Even though they're talking about electrical cars in the future, that's in the future. Right now, gas is $5 almost a gallon. You know, they serious about their money. We're going to get all we can now, but pretty soon it's going to be all electric. You know, I mean, they got 10 and 20 year plans. You know that, Doc. You know what I'm saying? People open up a business, it's 5 years before you see a profit. If you ain't got that kind of money, your business is going to fail. You understand? That's why most small businesses fail. And during a pandemic, the last thing you can do is open up a business if you depending on foot traffic. You understand? If you ain't set up for and with a reputation where people order your food, you're in trouble. You understand? Am I right or wrong? Rescue me if I'm wrong.
No, got it. Okay.
Right. Well, look, Rosky, what about next week, Rosky? You know, I got to get ready for tomorrow.
Okay, here we go. We got D'Anthony Langston, I think you know him.
My boy. You know, I taught him at Long Beach.
Yeah. So he's the founder of The Real Run and the evolution of basketball in Southern California. So we're going sports on Wednesday.
I can't wait. You know, I taught D'Anthony.
Yeah. We was all there together. Yeah, that's my teammate.
I'm going to look forward to it. All right.
Okay. All righty. Each one teach one.
Go ahead, Rusty.
As I say, each one teach one, conscious corner.
All right. Oh. Thanks again, Doc, for everything, man. You're a beautiful brother, man. You and Masinda. No appreciate problem. Y'all. No problem. All right.
All right.
2009.